Welcome to Acromegaly Update for Monday, June 15th, 2026. I'm your host, and today we have two segments for you. First, we'll walk through some new research on acromegaly that came out over the past week. Then we'll zoom out to the wider rare disease industry for our regular look at what's moving in biotech and pharma. Let's get into it. Segment 1. Acromegaly Research. This week, only one paper landed in a top-tier journal. But it's a significant one, a commentary published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism by Maria Flaceriu and Shlomo Melmed, two of the most prominent names in acromegaly research, titled Cancer Risk in Acromegaly, Reassessing the Evidence and Impact of Biochemical Control. This is exactly the kind of expert synthesis the field needs. For years, clinicians have told patients that uncontrolled acromegaly may raise cancer risk, particularly for colorectal cancer. But the actual strength of that evidence, and whether getting IGF-1 under control changes the risk trajectory, has been murkier than we'd like. Flaceriu and Melmed are taking a careful look at what the data actually support, which cancers are truly overrepresented, and whether long-term biochemical control translates into meaningful risk reduction. The abstract wasn't available yet at time of publication, but given the authors and the journal, this one is worth pulling and reading in full. We also broadened the search this week and found four more papers worth highlighting. The first is a surgical study from Denmark published in Acta Neurochirurgica, looking at endoscopic resection of growth hormone-secreting pituitary adenomas with something called routine medial cavernous sinus wall excision. Here's the problem it's trying to solve. Even for so-called low-grade tumors, ones that don't appear to heavily invade surrounding structures, biochemical remission rates after surgery are only about 40 to 60%. That's been frustratingly stagnant. This Danish team hypothesized that tiny amounts of tumor tissue hiding in the medial cavernous sinus wall, even in tumors that look clean on imaging, might be responsible for incomplete remission. So they started routinely removing that wall tissue along with the tumor. The paper reports their outcomes compared to historical controls. If the remission rates are better, this is the kind of incremental surgical refinement that could meaningfully shift what surgeons do in the operating room for GH adenoma cases. The second is an observational study from Brazil examining the relationship between nutrition, body composition, muscle strength, and physical performance in patients with acromegaly versus matched controls. Using DEXA scanning and food frequency questionnaires across 82 patients, the investigators teased apart how dietary intake affects lean mass, muscle function, and physical capacity in this population. Acromegaly does interesting and sometimes counterintuitive things to body composition. Patients can look muscular, but actually have impaired functional muscle quality. Understanding the nutritional contributors to that could help multidisciplinary care teams design better rehabilitation programs. Third, there's a case report in JCM Case Reports describing a 42-year-old woman who came in with weight loss, heart palpitations, amenorrhea, and progressive acromegalic features. When the team worked up her labs, they found not one but three active hormonal conditions: central hyperthyroidism, meaning her pituitary was oversecreting TSH, acromegaly from GH hypersecretion, and hyperprolactinemia, all driven by a single pituitary tumor. This is called a plurihormonal PI1 lineage adenoma, and cases with simultaneous biologically active TSH and GH hypersecretion are exceedingly rare. The diagnostic lesson here: if you're working up a new acromegaly case and there's anything unusual about the thyroid picture, run a full anterior pituitary panel. You might be looking at more than one problem from one source. Finally, a mechanistic human study in the Journal of Physiology looked at whether intravenous amino acid infusions can override the inhibitory effects of octreotide on insulin and glucagon secretion from the pancreas. Octreotide, the same drug used in somatostatin analog therapy for acromegaly, suppresses islet hormone output. But it turns out that if you flood the system with amino acids at the same time, the amino acid signal is strong enough to partially overcome that suppression, particularly for glucagon. This has implications for how we think about protein intake and metabolic management in patients on long-acting somatostatin analogs like octreotide LR or lanreotide. Timing and composition of meals may matter more than we've appreciated in the context of these drugs. That wraps up the acromegaly research for this week. Now, zooming out from acromegaly to the wider rare disease industry. Segment 2, Rare Disease Industry News. We had a busy week in rare disease dealmaking, and the theme running through all three of our top stories is essentially the same. Companies are betting big on next-generation gene silencing technologies to treat conditions that have historically had few or no options. The first story, Incyte has agreed to acquire Vega Therapeutics, a subsidiary of a company called Star Therapeutics, for $1.25 billion upfront, with up to $750 million more tied to sales milestones. So the deal could be worth as much as $2 billion total. The drug being acquired is called VGA39, and it's a potential treatment for von Willebrand disease, the most common inherited bleeding disorder. Right now, patients with severe von Willebrand disease have to give themselves intravenous infusions 2 to 3 times a week just to prevent dangerous bleeding. VGA039 is a once-monthly under-the-skin injection, and it's currently in late-stage testing. The reason Incyte is buying now, before approval, is strategic. Incyte's biggest drug, Jakafi, starts losing patent protection in the coming years, and they need new revenue drivers. CEO Bill Murray, who came in with a reputation for deal-making, called VGA39 a first-in-class therapy with compelling early data. The deal is expected to close between July and September. The second story, City Therapeutics has raised just under $100 million in a Series B round. City was co-founded by John Maraganore, who led Alnylam Pharmaceuticals for many years and helped build the modern RNAi industry, and a researcher at Ohio State University named Kotaro Nakanishi. The company is developing a proprietary class of RNA interference drugs it calls cleavage-inducing tiny nucleotide RNAs, designed to be smaller and more potent than conventional siRNA molecules and eventually to reach tissues beyond the liver. Their lead program, CityFXI, targets a blood clotting factor and just entered phase 1 testing for conditions like pulmonary embolism and stroke. But what's particularly interesting for the rare disease community is their second program, CityRBP4, which they expect to bring into human testing later this year for Stargardt disease. Stargardt is a rare inherited retinal dystrophy caused by a toxic buildup of vitamin A byproducts in the eye, and there are currently no approved treatments. City's approach is to silence the liver protein that ferries vitamin A to the eye in the first place. That's a clever mechanism, and several other companies are chasing the same target through different routes. The fresh funding will push both programs into mid-stage testing within the next year. Third, Alnylam Pharmaceuticals, the company that pioneered RNAi as a drug class and now markets treatments for TTR amyloidosis, acute hepatic porphyria, and primary hyperoxaluria type 1, among others, has struck an AI partnership with a company called Inceptive Nucleics that's potentially worth $2 billion, though it starts with $30 million in cash and equity. Inceptive's AI platform is built to learn the biological rules governing RNA structure and behavior, and the goal is to use those models to help Alnylam identify the most promising siRNA molecules earlier in development, with less of the trial and error that currently consumes time and capital. The companies say early joint work showed, in their words, exceptional performance within weeks in characterizing RNA molecules. For Alnylam, this fits into a broader strategy called Alnylam 2030 that aims to significantly expand the pipeline over the next few years. The deal is the latest in a series of large pharma AI partnerships announced across the industry over the past several months. Stepping back, what ties these three stories together is the recognition that RNA interference and gene silencing are maturing from a proof-of-concept technology into a platform. The investments in new platforms, new tissue targeting, and AI-accelerated molecule design are all bets that the next generation of rare disease drugs will be RNA-based. And given where the science has gone with Alnylam, that seems like a reasonable place to put your money. Before we close, in acromegaly itself, it's worth noting that somatostatin analogs and GH receptor antagonists like pegvisiment are in the same biological neighborhood as some of these RNA-silencing platforms. Different mechanisms, but both aimed at interrupting overactive growth hormone signaling. As the RNA world matures and learns to target tissues beyond the liver, a GH-silencing siRNA for pituitary adenomas isn't science fiction. The Alnylam and Citi investments we talked about today are building the foundational platform that could eventually get there. That's all for this week's acromegaly update. We'll be back next Monday. Stay curious.